I'm Sanjit Sethi, and this is On Topic, Conversations on Cultural Leadership.
I think that I think these issues have always existed. I think what's great is that the consumer is demanding change and they have a voice with brands. I actually think it's always been like this. It's just that people are, one, fed up, and two, are able to raise their concerns.
Lily Hall and Todd Paulson of Knock Incorporated are the last guests in this season of On Topic. Over the course of this season, I spoke with practicing artists, nonprofit and philanthropy leaders, government officials, and a chef and restaurant owner. Cultural leadership takes many forms, and I thought it fitting to end with a conversation with the founder and chief creative officer of a creative agency, especially one with such a strong commitment to community development. When you think of an ad agency, diversity and commitment to community engagement are not necessarily the first things that come to mind. But Knock Incorporated, which Lily started nearly 20 years ago, turns that on its head. In our conversation, we spoke about what it means to be a values-driven ad agency, how philosophies on corporate responsibility have changed for them, and how they see empathy as a key driver in their work. You know, what I wanted to do is start off by talking a little bit about what Knock is, what it does, and maybe we can start there, and then we can talk a little bit about how Knock was formed. But maybe we can just talk, if you guys can provide a brief description about Knock and what some of the things that it does right now.
You know, Knock is a creative agency. We're a full experience creative agency, and we're driven to cultivate love and loyalty for brands. You know, I mean, what we are very good at is about experiences and making those happen. And what we have really done in our business is made sure that we're serving both large companies all the way down to small, entrepreneurial startups and things that matter, like pro bono and different and nonprofit partners and advocacy groups to make the world a better place. So we have such a range of different types of clients. The history should start with Lily, I think, and how we started in all of this. But we've changed so much over the years. And, once we started in retail and now have changed what our business is. Lily, do you want to give the history? Because you're the founder.
Sure. So I founded Knock in 2001, just shortly after 9/11, and went right into our first recession in 2002. But I would say that when we launched, it's interesting when we look at our first clients. We had a very large client, Fortune 10 now, but I think at the time it was probably Fortune 100. And then a startup. And so what's interesting, I think, about that is that today that's still in our DNA. We really enjoy working with startups and entrepreneurs. And as Todd just mentioned, doing a lot of work in the community. And that breadth of work and experiences, I think, really enriches all the work that we do and fuels the soul of a lot of the people at Knock. Is what we continue to hear.
And, and certainly the Twin Cities is an area where you see quite a few creative agencies. And it seems like a pretty rich and vibrant ecology for that. But what I'm struck by with what Knock is doing is both of you have mentioned a few times, is there's a strong social ethos to the work that Knock is doing. And I guess I'm interested in knowing as to where did that ethos come from? I know it sounds like, Lily, that you've had international experiences in your past through your education and beyond. And I'm just wondering, is that inbuilt, or is that something that's innate, or is that something that was done over time and experience?
No, I would say that's who we are. It's in the DNA of actually both of us. Todd has an interesting background, and he can share it in a little bit. So I would say that I grew up born in Chicago to a Brazilian, and then shipped off to Brazil at the age of five. And really, my family, my mom was a very generous soul. We lived with my grandparents. There were always people coming by the house, and they were always helping people. So I think from a very early age, I experienced, you know, what it was like to help the community, to help family members. And, you know, I think that that's just part of who we were. And then all the way through, you know, coming back to the U.S., my mom always had her door open and always gave what she could. So I think that that's definitely something how I grew up. But then also being in the metro area and having large organizations as role models. And so, you know, we started doing pro bono very, very early on. You know, our feeling was, you know, let's give what we can. And if we can't give money, we can give time and we can give design and art and strategy. And so I think we always looked to the large companies, the Targets, Best Buy, General Mills as role models. So even though we give in a very different way, we look up to them. And I think that that's really been an important part, you know, of our existence.
Yeah. You know, and my story is similar, but in a different place. I grew up in rural Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota, in a community called Bergen. My grandma was the same way. It was a small, tight-knit community. She had a large family, 8 children. And she was the person who was always have the open door, and someone who needed a home for a holiday or needed something, she was there. Then that was instilled into my parents. My parents are very about the community and giving back and helping out. They're very much about being neighborly people. It's interesting, you know, they're in a pocket that's very conservative and yet they're very liberal down there. And it's all because of my grandma and what she instilled of this open and inclusive idea. And I agree with you, Lily, completely. Like as we transition to the metro and just giving back to our community and feels like what home to me.
So many large corporations. Lily, you mentioned, you know, a couple that you've seen as models. They've also been up for a degree of critique in terms of kind of an overly capitalistic and overly kind of profit driven model. How do you? I'm just wondering, how do you extract the kind of good from values of institutions that you admire, but also recognize where maybe they're falling short? Is it? I'm wondering kind of what's that process? Is that something that includes kind of discussion more broadly with your team? How are you able to not look at maybe either systems or organizations or industries with overly rose-colored glasses, I guess?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, for us, we're really focused on NOC and what NOC is doing. And I would say that, you know, it's a very complex world, and you know, we can sit and dissect and pull things apart, but I would say that we're not necessarily looking at it through rose-colored glasses. I think what we're trying to see is the good, and what we can do as an agency of our size with the resources we have, and you know, looking to I would say looking to the bigger organizations and corporations in our community as role models. It has been, I think, more around inspiration and seeing the good that they do and the impact that they have had in the community. And so, and then, you know, I think we get approached a lot. And I remember even in the beginning when we started to do pro bono, I wasn't quite sure how we could manage it or handle it. And so we've learned along the way what we can do and what we can provide and what we can give. I think there's a concept that it has to be all or nothing. And when I talk to other leaders, or I talk to not even just in our industry, just entrepreneurs in general, it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can give what you're capable of, whether it's a few hours a week, whether it's mentorship or an internship. So I think that, you know, I really encourage people to do what they can, but to do something. And so for us, I think it's just, you know, we've always looked at it like, what is it that we're passionate about? Where do we see need? We moved into North Minneapolis a decade ago. We're in the Harrison neighborhood. And it was really important for us to engage with the community. This was our home. And so from very early on, we actually had a nonprofit come and knock on our door, Venture North, who needed some help with branding. And we were really, really excited about that opportunity because it felt good that they were excited we were there and that we could partner. So I would say that we've probably done way more than anybody ever thought we could do, but it's the right thing to do for us.
That's great. Thanks for that response. I'd love to kind of roll back to Lily as you were talking about how you founded NOC in 2001, and to where the point in time where the two of you started working together. And I know that when you and I met, I was fortunate to get a tour of the space at NOC, and then was amazed to find that the two of you have been sharing an office for quite a while. And I guess if I can go back to that moment where the two of you started working together, and did you, if you can describe that, but also just talk about at what point in time did you realize, okay, this is kind of a long-term thing. And it's not just kind of a, because oftentimes when you mentioned startups earlier, so many startups come and go. And what I'm struck by is the solidity and adaptability that NOC has had over the years. It seems like that's got to be in part due to the dynamics that the two of you have together. So I'd love just to hear a little bit more about that story.
Sure. Todd and I met actually before I launched NOC, and through a mutual friend. And when I was actually thinking about starting my own company, I started to talk to people in the community, share, my concept, what I was thinking about doing and launching. And Todd was one of the first people that I talked to. And I would say, so our relationship started as a freelance contract relationship. Todd is super, super talented. So I was fortunate we actually started working together on NOC's very first project. And I just loved working with him, and I loved how we worked together. And I always tell people the right side of the brain and the left side of the brain, and that continues. But I just have an enormous amount of respect for Todd and our relationship. And so we kept going, and I used to joke with Todd because I bootstrapped the company. I self-funded. And so there, I didn't have a lot of money and I couldn't afford a lot of things. And so I would joke with Todd, like, you need to be NOC creative director. I can't afford to pay you what you're worth, but you need to be the creative director. And he would just what he did now. He started laughing. And he did that for a few years until finally we got to a place where things were really kind of rolling pretty quickly and growing. We had a big growth spurt. And so I came to him with a proposal to make him a partner in the business. And so that was, I think that he had other clients. And so every year I would do the 1099s. And can I swear on here? Is that allowed? I would say, shit, I can't afford this guy. Like, he's got other clients. Look at what we're paying him. There's no way. But I just kept insisting and begging. And so he finally agreed. Right, Todd?
Yeah, exactly.
You have a slightly different perspective. I mean, it sounds a little one-sided. I want to make sure you've got a chance to...
Yeah, no. It's exactly the same way. I have mutual respect for Lily. And when we first started, she comes from a background that wasn't from agency and creative and design. And so when we were working together, I instantly, personality wise, we worked together so, so well. I wanted to really make sure in my time of consulting I was doing a good business, like Lily said, but I was running it all by myself. And so I was doing all the roles. I was creative director, accounts, production, billing, which I'm not good at. And so with Lily, I wanted to make sure that it was a good relationship before we really started working together. And as time grew, I mean, just how we approach things is similar, but with different lenses, and we bring different things to the table, which is so great. And I she's a mentor of mine. I respect her so much. And we joke about it. Like, our relationship, we have so many more papers signed between each other than sometimes our actual partner, our life partners. And so it's I've been blessed that I found Lily because we just gel so well, and yet we challenge each other, and it's not it's the kind of challenge that's good, because good things come out of it. You know, we do projects together and we're just like, what about this? What about that? Question each other. Like, and we get to better solutions because of each other. And that collaboration goes through all of our agency. Like you mentioned, we've officed together virtually since the beginning. And that collaboration runs through the DNA of our agency because of that. And it's part of our values of what we believe in.
And, you know, what I'm struck by in hearing both of you talk about it is that it seems like on one hand, it's a solid but evolving rapport and relationship that the two of you have. And I guess I keep thinking of a series of terms that in some ways get so overly used that there are times where I want to ban them from discourse, you know, just because I think they sometimes don't allow us to say what we really mean. And one of those words is collaboration. I think collaboration is such a convenient tuck word when we're trying to talk about something more. And so I guess, you know, I'd love to know how, I'm assuming the notion of collaboration between the two of you has evolved over time and is probably been either pushed the limit or stressed or stretched in different ways. I guess I'm just wondering if the two of you can give an example, or maybe each one of you can give an example where you think that the ability for you working together, and I'm not hunting for a problem. I'm just wondering where, if you felt like that the capacity for collaboration was really pushed in some way, by a single problem or by an issue that you had to contend with?
Well, I'll just kind of share my experience with collaboration. And it was really important to me when I launched Knock that people worked together. And I think my background and my experiences really, you know, what I had experienced in other, you know, one other agency, you know, that I had come from, it was a small boutique agency, and I was sort of struck by, and I was new in the business. So I came out of the fashion and, you know, sporting goods world and apparel. And so I got to my agency and it was small. It was wonderful. They did great work, but I was just kind of blown away by the fact that all the creatives were on one side of the building. And when it was a one level building and the account and project managers and ops were on the other side. And I always thought that that was really odd. And again, that was me being new and not really knowing that that's really what, you know, how most agencies set their offices up. But even prior to that, my experience, you know, working with a global company called Adidas, I worked on the Americas team, and I was really surprised at the silos there as well. You know, the tension between sales and marketing. They literally did not like each other. And that's, I think, really common in a lot of organizations. And to me, it just never made any sense because I could not do my job without the support of a great marketing partner. And so launching Knock, that was something that was really important to me. And when I spoke with Todd and others, you know, I really wanted to understand stylistically how they worked and how they approached the work. Because there's a lot of really talented people out there. But if you are only interested in working in a silo and coming back and presenting your work, that was something that I was not that interested in. You know, as Todd said, it's getting in a room, it's bringing our experiences, our lenses to a project, because, you know, if we all come from the same background and we all come with the same lenses, you know, we're going to look at the problem in the same way. So I think that was very, very strategic early on because I didn't enjoy that tension. And there can be tension, and I think tension is good, but it's when you're there challenging each other, like, hey, have you thought about it this way? This is what I see. I always, you know, it's interesting being in the office with Todd because, you know, the creative and all of that defaults to Todd, but I'll share with him, you know, Todd, this is what I'm seeing. I can't articulate it. I can't tell you how to fix it, but this is what I see. And he's always great. Like, oh, that's okay. I get it. I get what you're saying. And so, you know, that's brought throughout the office. And the more diverse of a staff you have, the more lenses, you know, you'll have, and the more people can raise their hand and share their ideas and concerns.
I think to add on to that too, the result of all of that is we don't believe in egos in our agency at all. It's about we, it's about us working together. And so, and you know, sometimes there's been, you know, people in other agencies that I've been, there's been egos and people that are kind of running it. And we believe in everyone's voice matters, and to get to the best solution, that's important. And like Lily said, lenses and different voices create that, and we create better product because of that. And so that's what that means for us, is working together to create and solve problems.
And, you know, I'm curious to know, do you think those problems have gotten more complicated? Do you think they've become, absolutely, or have they become kind of, do you feel like that's, you're easy, they're easier to handle because of the wealth of experience? I'm just curious to know.
No, it's actually getting harder. You know, I mean, it really is harder. We're learning so much as we go through this, and, you know, we're continuous learning is what we believe in. And so, you know, we want the input from, you know, the people that are new in our industry to bring new ideas. We want outside voices to help us learn. It's the problems have gotten harder, and we, you know, creating solutions have gotten harder.
And can you put a little bit more color on that, Todd? How have things gotten harder, in what way?
Well, I think us really waking up and really looking at our industry and what is, you know, is the non-diversity in our industry. And so we, as we do that, we're trying to learn and understand and bring more people into our industry so we have a better, well-rounded view of the world. And that's critical. And, you know, it's something that we're putting action to so that we can understand. And
I think, I'll just chime in. I think that the world, I mean, I think these issues have always existed. I think what's great is that the consumer is demanding change, and they have a voice with brands. And I think that that's in a platform. And so I think where it's become more complex, I actually think it's always been like this. It's just that people are, one, fed up, and two, you know, are able to raise their concerns. You know, when you get a catalog or you see something and you don't see yourself represented, people have a platform now where they can express their concern, frustration. And it's really important that brands and companies and all of us, you know, wake up and listen, and make sure that we're, you know, making change and being inclusive. And so I think it's been there. I think it's just now that, you know, people are just tired.
Yeah. There is certainly a tremendous degree of exhaustion. And, you know, I guess one of the things I'm looking at and thinking about, the commitment that NOC has to pro bono work, is what you're looking for when you take on a project with a corporation or a part of industry, similar to what you're looking at when you're taking on a pro bono client? And since I guess I'm kind of wanting to know, there are some organizations, I'm thinking, for example, of IDEO, and, you know, when they created IDEO.org, I think in part they were also looking at a way that they created a different lobe, specifically focused on, you know, social enterprise and social change in a certain way. Does NOC embrace the idea of having a kind of a firewall, being able to say this is pro bono and this is where we embrace kind of a kind of a culture that's really focused on kind of nonprofit support and development and social change, and then a separate kind of set of ethos for saying this is our criteria when we work with corporate clientele? I'm just wondering, what's the operational model of how you balance the two? And do you find yourself looking for commonalities when you take on whether a corporate client or whether you take on a nonprofit?
Well, I would say we're not that organized. It's been more organic. I would say that, I mean, you know, from the very beginning, I mean, I remember being approached to do a pro bono project. It was an organization called Save Suicide. Was it Suicide Awareness Voices of Education? A very intense subject. This is close to, I don't know, Todd, 18 years ago, 17 years ago.
Yeah, probably 18.
Very, very early in the mental health space, not early in the mental health space, but early in recognizing and, you know, for people to be able to raise their hand and ask for help. But I would say that it was very organic. I think the one thing that we learned in the process was, you know, things that we are passionate about, which are, you know, arts, education, youth, social causes. Those are the things that we have gotten involved in. I wouldn't say, you know, a lot of the time people do seek us out and we want to make sure that it is definitely something that we're passionate about. But I would say, you know, today the work tends to be around those causes. And we do not treat our pro bono clients any differently than our corporate clients. So if we take on a pro bono client, you know, it is the same as if they are a paying client. There's no B team, it's the A team. You know, we take on, what we want to make sure is we have bandwidth. And so, you know, we'll commit to a certain amount of clients per year and certain amount of hours. We always exceed it because there's always more. And so, you know, we're not as boxed into to a formula. It's definitely things that we get really, really excited about and feel that, you know, we can bring value and help, you know, help these nonprofits that are, you know, as you know, struggling and, you know, there's really not a lot of money for marketing. And so, it's been a great experience.
You know, when we're working with companies and nonprofits, we really look to make sure that they align with our values. And that is critical of our decision. And then also looking to our staff, if they believe in it, in the values, and they signed up for our values is coming in here, but there may be different idiosyncrasies that they don't believe in. And so we don't have someone work on something they don't fully believe in.
Right. Yeah. And I guess that kind of, that makes me think about, as you start to bring in people to work in the orbit of NOC, and I've certainly met members of your team over time, I guess I'm wondering from the two of you, and what are the beyond the kind of functionality and the skill sets that they're bringing? I guess I'm wondering, is there, you know, I'm thinking of almost like the biblical term, the kind of shibboleth, or is there a passcode that they need? Is there certain things that you think that they need to hit in order to be part of NOC team culture, and beyond maybe being a generous spirit but I guess I'm just kind of wondering, it seems like it's such a small, intimate, cross-pollinating environment that it seems like that you're probably also looking carefully for something in addition to what's on paper or what's immediately presented in terms of skill sets and acumen.
I think today, I mean, I think early on, you know, I'm curious by nature and I'm drawn to people that don't necessarily look like me or have the same backgrounds as I do. And so I think that comes from, you know, having lived abroad, having had the upbringing that I had. And so I tend to be drawn to people that have different backgrounds and experiences. I would say that today, you know, it's interesting when people come in or reach out, you know, they see, when they walk in that door and you've experienced it, they can feel it. They can feel the there's a vibe in the office, that's very welcoming, you know, from the time people walk into the front door, we want to make sure that they're taken care of, that they're attended to. And it's very much like, you know, treating it's our home. So you greet people at the door, you walk people to the door, you offer them. And so I think people right away feel comfortable. They feel, welcomed, and then they can sense the vibe in the staff, you know, the laughter in the background and people working together, and they see the collaboration. And so I would say when we're interviewing people, you know, when people bring that up, wow, you know, there's such a good feeling here, or I love, you know, how diverse your agency is, or I've done my homework. And so you start to pick up on the fact that those are things that they value. I would say we don't always get it right, but I think we, our process now, it's not just one person interviewing one person. We want them to meet the team. We want them to meet parts of the leadership team. And I think you really, through that interviewing process, you really get a sense of who they are. And people that are passionate. I mean, Todd has this great sense when people are passionate about design and about, you know, the craft. And I think you can pick that up in the interview. So it's a process. We aren't always rushing to hire. I think the other thing too that we do that has been great is we're constantly meeting with people, whether we have something in that moment or not. So it's not like, oh, we need to hire somebody, go and talk to 20 people. It's this fluid process. And I think that that's been a great thing too. We've got an amazing tool we developed. And so if somebody comes in, and even if we don't have something at the time, you know, we're able to get a sense of what they're interested in and what they might be good at. And then we keep a database. And so as we win business or as we grow, we're able to tap into, you know, some of the people that we've been meeting with over the, you know, years.
I think it's a really good point is what you had said earlier about us constantly talking with people. That's what we are constantly doing. We never put out a job post and then wait with 20 resumes. What we're doing is we're constantly talking with people, going out past our networks, talking to people and finding the right kind of fits for us and people that will also make us grow as an agency with, you know, new perspectives. And so we look at the resume, we look at the portfolio, and that's critical, but we're looking for their character and what they can bring to it. And so there's characteristics that are of the people that we work with at NOC, that they're positive and grateful and have vision and listen. And it's those kind of things help us define the character of a person when we're talking with them. And that's how we hire, I think, more for character.
Do you ever pass on a project because you feel like that a potential client doesn't get your values?
Yes.
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 Can you kind of describe without naming names and organizations to get you in, but can you describe an example of that just to put some color on it?
I mean, I would say, you know, you know, in the 19 years we've been in business, you know, we tend to take, we always err on the side of the glass half full, right? Like, oh, this will be great. Or, you know, we do get excited. I would say that the vetting process has gotten better. And so I would say early on, and like anything, it's like, you know, dating or meeting somebody, you know, those early conversations tend to be, you know, if the person's rude or just if they don't value what NOC can bring, or not even just NOC, if they don't value that what we do makes, you know, it impacts their business or their bottom line or whatever their objective is, we pick up on that right away. And, you know, and if there's tension and sort of a bad feeling from the beginning, that does not get better. So we've learned the hard way. And so I think that for us, we have questions and we vet things and then we talk to each other and we have honest conversations. Like, I don't think this is a good fit. I don't think that they value our industry. I don't think they value this process. And so we have declined. And so I think we also look at it in a couple of ways. There's people who've been through this process. Maybe they've had other agency relationships. And then we also have, you know, when we are working with early stage and startups, that maybe they haven't had this experience. And so do we need to shepherd them along? And we're willing to do that. We're willing to educate and help people in the process. But the respect is a huge part of our culture. And if this person isn't respecting us in these first conversations, you know, what are they going to be like to our teams? And then we've also had to resign clients who became abusive or became disrespectful.
Disrespected the process.
Yeah. And the staff, mainly the people, like if they're mean to our people, then, you know, that's not a good relationship.
Yeah. It seems like that then it just becomes a transactional relationship. And it sounds like you're trying to,
we're not interested in that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're trying to build something where there's a greater network that you're trying to create. I'd love to shift the conversation to thoughts about culture and cultural leadership. I know it's in some ways kind of an amorphic topic, but it's one certainly it's coming up for me over here at MCAD more. And I know Todd, as a member of the board, you've been hearing me talk about it. But I just kind of wanted to know, has the notion of cultural leadership come up in the work at NOC? Certainly, I see a lot of the work that you both do is really exemplifying aspects of cultural leadership. And I'm just wondering, as you start to think about leadership qualities, whether you're calling it cultural leadership or something else, are there ways that you feel like that notion has evolved or changed over time?
Yeah, I believe it has. You know, we're about developing leaders is our goal. Cultural creative leaders. I mean, we just are developing leaders. And we want them to be socially aware and culturally conscious of things and encourage curiosity and courage and passion for social justice and equity. And so we're very much focused on building a team that is for the future. And it's evolved like as time has gone on.
And I think too that, I mean, for us, our people have always been the most important part of the business. I mean, it's our people are number one. And when you put your people first and you develop, and we have a very strong culture at NOC, a very tight knit, as you said, but we're also very open to new ideas. And there's a culture of sharing, and it's constantly, it's all day long. It's, you know, we've got trend reports going out or people sharing interesting articles. We've invested a lot in diversity, equity, and inclusion work and workshops over the years that also has evolved. We introduce, you know, we host, as you know, all kinds of events in the office, and we invite our staff to join. Our staff brings us ideas of things that they get excited about. We have a staff meeting every Monday morning where we do presentations. So there is this constant idea flowing and curiosity. And I think that excites people. And I think it shows that we're interested in other conversations and other things in the world. And so I think when you open that up and when we show and share, people jump onto that. And you know, we get emails, you know, we got one last night from a freelance person that has seen some of the things that we have gotten involved with, just introducing something else. And so I think that people really enjoy that because they're learning. Every day I learn. And I think...
And they're seeking continuous growth is right, what... And right. That's what we're trying to provide, is that they can continue to learn and grow.
You know, to that end... I think one of the more abused terms has been the notion of mentorship, which I think started to almost become bastardized into feeling like someone with more experience giving advice to someone with less experience. But, you know, one thing that struck me from meeting some members of your team is that it does feel like it's a real mentorship focused environment and maybe in a way that's less about one person giving advice to someone else, but people sharing their experiences and insights across both ways from very different different perspectives. And I just am wondering, as leaders of an organization, how do you make sure that there's the time and the space and the ability for that to still occur when you've got 19,000 deadlines?
I think, you know, by creating these, what we had talked about earlier about working together, we've created these kind of tight-knit relationships by cross-functional teams, people working with all different types of people within there, and you learn so much from each other. And so that setup of us working together has created this kind of, like the overused word of mentorship. It's like someone who's new in the industry is teaching us exactly what to do socially and vice versa. So it's this
reverse mentorship.
Reverse mentorship, exactly. And it's I think that working together in that tight knit group that we have has really been the thing that's been successful. You know, as we've gone into the pandemic, that collaboration, I do sense that we are struggling a little bit with the collaboration piece. Like, we're getting the work done, it looks amazing, but I think those kind of learning and growing from other people, you miss that because you're having to schedule a Zoom meeting and there's not that just where you can, I want to pick your brain and learn about this, help me understand something. I think we're missing some of that now.
That's gotta be tough. I mean, and I think that's tough across the board, right? Because it's the, I don't know if people really have water coolers anymore, but it's the water cooler conversation. I feel like I just dated myself, but it is the kind of water cooler conversation, right? That is
for sure.
Informal exchange of ideas. It's the, it's what are you having for lunch? Oh, you know, what are you working on? And then that leads to an exponential innovation. It's 40 minutes into this conversation and, you know, we're finally talking about the pandemic. And I guess that's like kind of in some ways a perfect segue to wonder, you know, are there specific assumptions that the two of you have made either about working with each other or about NOC itself, or even more broadly, if we can pan out to the field of design and creative work? That you think have been completely exploded or obliterated over the past few months of living with this pandemic?
Oh, it's been tough. I mean, as Todd said, you know, for us, because that environment is so dynamic and energetic, I was actually traveling and came back. We were prepared. So we, you know, my husband's from Italy. We'd been, you know, and we're very global at NOC. And so we'd been following the virus and what was happening. And at some point, you know, looked at Todd, I said, this is going to happen here. We're going to shut down. We're going to have to shut down. And so we started to prepare, you know, we went to our wonderful IT staff and just said, we need to be ready 100% hardware and software to work from home. And so we were ready about a week and a half or 2 weeks before the governor shut the state down. And we were actually doing a staff meeting and telling people to
test.
Go home and practice. Let's practice with Teams. And
that was the Friday before.
So the preparation part was very smooth. And then when, you know, we made the call that, you know, we're not coming back to the office. I was actually traveling and when I got back, I remember going to the office. It was a Saturday and it was just empty and computers, you know, were gone. And I literally stood in the office and just burst into tears. I was just like, when are we ever going to be together again? When is this office ever going to be filled with 100 and whatever people again? It was super emotional because we know how important that environment is. And we've even, you know, even with our staff, you know, we're doing a slow reentry, you know, from a mental health standpoint. I mean, there we have definitely have employees that are loving and enjoying it and it's working well, but we have quite a few people, myself included, and I would say Todd included, that, you know, from a mental health standpoint, we need to be in there. And so what we did is Todd actually pulled together an incredible team. It was called the Homecoming Committee to try to figure out how we could get people back into the office, especially the people that really were struggling at home. And so, that team did a fantastic job. Safety, being number one and following all the protocols, you know, that, that the CDC has recommended and the governor has recommended. But it's been really important for some people to be there. And so on a given day today, there's maybe 12, 15 people that come and go. But even that little moment, you know, you're waving across the office with the mask on, has really helped people out. But I would say that we're taking it one week at a time, and we're learning every week. And it was funny in the beginning, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this, but in the beginning, there was all this excitement about, oh my gosh, not just at NOC. I mean, all of my networks, this is working so well. And everyone's so productive. And then I just kept saying, that's because we have to be. There's nothing open. There is nothing for people to do or a place to go. I said, just wait until things start to reopen. It's going to be interesting. And so, you know, we start to see a little bit of that, you know, people sort of, you know, getting involved in other things that maybe isn't related to work. But I would say for the most part, our staff has been pretty phenomenal.
You know, the one thing to build on that is, you know, we, like I said, we're a very tight knit group. So when we did go to Zoom meetings and all of that and collaborating in that way, we maintained and we did an amazing job doing that. When we did a survey about coming back for the homecoming, what was resounding, what people were missing was, I want to be working together with people, but currently I'm concerned. And that's, we put safety and health first, and that's where we've always been. And so we've now, the office has become by appointment. So you can come in and collaborate with the team and work together, or you can come in and have a mental break from your family or your house. So it's been, people really miss the camaraderie of our teams.
Beyond what you're missing, I guess I'm wondering, what are you learning? In the sense, are there things Sure. that you didn't think you had the capacity to do that you do now? Are there things that that you feel like you're going to tell clients, advise them differently now, that based on what you're learning? And I'll give you an example. You know, and I think it's something that, Todd, we've talked about in conversations with the board, where I had always lamented there wasn't a chance for us to all come together, faculty, students, and staff physically, to have a conversation about meaningful ideas. And here we are, we're going to have that opportunity, which we're going to do it virtually. But we realized that there are ways that we can provide connectivity that we didn't think we had the ability to when we were so focused in a physical environment. So I guess, you know, I guess I'm wondering, what's not learning? What are the two of you learning? What are things that you think you'll be doing differently in the future?
I think what you just said is a great example. And that's what's happening in NOC as well. Like before, we thought we all had to be in the same place to make something happen. We don't. We can do that. And we've had large company meetings about, you know, the state of the state of how we're doing and that transparency, and everyone tuned in. Whereas, you know, when we tried to get together with people, that would never happen. And so we've changed, and for the better, because it's more inclusive. Everyone can be involved. You know, whereas before we would have everyone in a group, and we have people that are around, you know, in different parts of the country, like New York and
Chicago,
and they joined in, but now we're all joining in. So there's kind of this better connectivity in that regard as a company. I definitely think we've learned that way.
Lily, anything to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're having to figure out how to engage, people that maybe aren't in even at NOC, you know, the people that didn't have the loudest voices in the room, and just making sure that we're being sensitive, you know, when you're on a Zoom call, just making sure, I think we're more aware of just making sure that we're looking at their faces and trying to pick up on their body language, and just making sure that they're okay, or if they, you know, if you can sort of tell that they want to say something, you can do, maybe not call them out, but you can do a little note in the chat directed like, hey, do you want to share anything? any thoughts? I think that that's the one thing that we would, you know, we're really good at in person. You know, you can kind of tell someone's starting to fidget, but they're not really saying anything. And I think that that's something that we're learning how to do via these tools and just making sure. And I would say that we're probably doing a better job of checking in with people.
Yeah.
You know,
Lily, like that's what I was going to add on.
Yeah. I sense that something, this person seems off. And so, you know, maybe we didn't, because we were going 150 miles an hour before, you know, really taking the time, you know, if I sense that someone seems sad, just making sure that whether I feel comfortable reaching out to that person or if I know that someone else is closer to them, just going and saying, is this person okay? You know, I think there's a lot going on. We've been fortunate at NOC because we have not done any furloughs or pay cuts, knock on wood. Hopefully we can get through this. You know, we got the PPP loan in the first round. We've managed our business well. We're independent, so Todd and I can sit down and make decisions about, you know, what needs to happen from a budget standpoint and, you know, from cutting our salaries to, you know, those are the things that we can prioritize. And so it's been really important, you know, for us to hold on to our staff. But what we're experiencing is, you know, people are experiencing things in their personal lives that have nothing to do with work. And so I think it's just making sure that we're being sensitive to what's happening. It's interesting with, you know, they're tracking, you know, the government, everyone's tracking the number of people that are unemployed, but what they're not tracking are the number of people that have had pay reductions and, you know,
they have to take on more work because they don't have
three workloads because their team has been furloughed. And so from our client's perspective, you know, their needs and, you know, we're sensing just a lot of stress with what's happening. And so I think for us, just that's a whole nother lens. It's a whole nother, we feel a responsibility to make sure that, you know, not just financially and physically are people well, but mentally, you know, that's really, really something that I would say we've always been a very empathetic company, but I would say more so now, like, you know, there's just a lot of tough stuff happening.
Yeah. I think, you know, to build on that is like, the statuses have become more valuable for my teams in that, like, them being able to hear what's happening in the rest of the business, you know, on a weekly basis, monthly basis is valuable to them. And they so want to understand what's happening. You know, they want reassurance that things are going to be okay. And I can't always do that. But, you know, like, it's been vital that these statuses have been happening between the teams because they can hear what's happening in other sides of the business. We got a new client. This is what's happening. They want that, and it helps with the anxiety of it all. And right. I can, like Lily said, I can see in their eyes if they're concerned or can see like if they have things. We have these, I feel more connected to everyone now than I did before because I'm checking in with them and seeing how both life and work are going. And I think that the relationship has gotten closer in some regards in that way.
You know, I can imagine in some ways that it makes you appreciate the nuances of relationships and interaction so much more. I know I certainly lament, you know, here I am in my empty office and knowing that I haven't had a chance to have a sit down with my team since the middle of March, you know, and there's a disruption, like you mentioned, with, you know, body language and cues that you get with that physicality. You know, in the time that we have left, I mean, it seems like certainly the global pandemic was one that was a really kind of laid upon us, and then upon that, especially within this community, was just the searing events of Mr. Floyd's murder and the aftermath, and certainly just geographically where NOC is located, but also just with both of your commitments in terms of the community and Lily being on the board of Juxtaposition Arts. Mm-hmm. I guess I just wanted to know, has that has that recalibrated your view about Knock's purpose, or has it shifted priorities? Have you, are you starting to do kind of a rethink? How have you started to think as you exist in the orbits of these two pandemics, the pandemic of racism and how blatantly apparent it is in this country now? I'm just curious to know, and in some ways it may be too early, but it seems like I wanted to know what some of your immediate observations and possible changes that you're thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, as we shared, you know, we're you know, in the Harrison neighborhood in North Minneapolis, and we've been very active in North Minneapolis with several nonprofits. You know, The Link, which works with youth at risk. We've got our relationship with Juxtaposition Arts. We have, you know, we did the project North Market, you know, which North Minneapolis didn't have a functioning full service grocery store for 10 years. It's been a food desert. And I think for us during the protests and some of the riots, you know, just making, you know, for, our, you know, our hearts were not so much for our office. I mean, we boarded up. It was this very surreal experience, but I think we were more concerned about what was going to happen, you know, to some of our neighbors who are more vulnerable than we are. I mean, you know, I mean, not that you, you know, I mean, of course we were nervous and every morning we looked at our phones to see if our building was burnt down. But for the most part, you know, we have insurance, you know, there was nobody there. No one was going to get hurt. We were more concerned about that grocery store and making sure that nothing was going to happen to that store. And we have, you know, a lot of employees who live in North Minneapolis and making sure that they were safe. And it was really cool, you know, to see, even in South, you know, obviously in South Minneapolis, we have several employees, you know, that were really close to where George Floyd was murdered. And we have an internal communication tool called Trillion. And it was amazing. I mean, I was in tears to see people offering, you know, for people to stay with them that they didn't even know each other. Like, hey, I have an extra room. You can come stay here if you don't feel safe. So there was a lot of really incredible things happening. But I would say that, you know, our commitment is even stronger. You know, we to see the activity that went on and people wanting to help and people wanting to do something. And again, more sharing. I mean, we have staff who, you know, hey, I'm going to go volunteer at this place or this organization needs, here's a whole list of things that they need. So definitely continued and obviously a bigger commitment. But I think what it did is it really brought awareness to maybe the rest of the staff that didn't have as much experience with the North and South Minneapolis communities. So definitely a bigger commitment. And it's something, it was heartbreaking. You know, I had family all over the world reaching out to see if we were okay. And just our hearts were all breaking for this man and his family and the community. And so I think that we actually got on a Zoom right away, you know, I think in less than 48 hours with the entire staff, just, you know, it wasn't even organized. I mean, there was no agenda. We knew, yeah, people were hurting and people needed to be together. And so 80 people joined that call, like very little, notice. And it was powerful to hear from, especially our Black employees that were really, we didn't ask them to talk. They just wanted to share what they were feeling. And I think for the rest of the staff to listen and listen to their daily experiences, some of them were really open and vulnerable. And I think what it's done is the work that we've been doing, we realized, you know, the foundational work around diversity, equity, and inclusion. For us, we sensed a desire that we need to go even deeper, you know, get more uncomfortable, get, you know, we need to all be educated. And so we're in the process of hiring the woke coach. I don't know if you know Sina Hodges, to come in and do more work with our staff around these conversations.
And we worked with Brand Lab in the past.
Yes.
And various other groups that are helping us educate. What's been really cool is that our staff is so committed to making change in our industry. And so groups are working on ways that we can help get more people of color in our industry and find them, and they're there, and they're so committed to this. It's exciting and to see, and we will make change in our agency for the better.
And that seems like that's got to inform this ever-evolving notion of what cultural leadership is, both in terms of the responsibility, but also the opportunity to grow and develop that. Thank you both for joining me today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of On Topic. To find out more about all of my guests this season, head to mcad.edu/on-topic, where you can find profiles and links of our guests and more information about this remarkable series.